So as a young lad from East London, not very well educated, I class myself as a very educated man now, but I also say quickly that school had nothing to do with that. And so I grew up not having any mentors. I got in trouble and I tried to find connections and community and growth in all the wrong places. I was on a building site with my dad, and there's my dad right near the ladder, working away. Next to him is my uncle, my cousins, and then right down at the far end was my granddad. Is that it? Is that my lifeline? Have I just seen my future? I turned around to my granddad, and probably the smartest thing he ever said to me, I said to him, you know, granddad, did you always want to be doing this even when you're that age? And he turned around and not even made eye contact with me, but carried on eating his bacon sandwich and his cup of tea. And he said, if you don't get out now, tomorrow you'll be me. You know, I tried doing loads of different jobs, tried working in bars, working on the door, delivering cakes, trying to be an insurance salesman, door-to-door salesman, selling books. Couldn't even read books, let alone sell them. And of course, me knocking on your door, that's not going to go well. And I just tried many, many different things, trying to find out where I fit. Just found a load of places that I didn't, but had the resolve to keep quitting. And for me, it was, I'm going to find the right thing. And for my family, it was, he can't hold a job down. You know, my greatest education and my greatest profits came from my largest failures. If I can get you back to talking to individuals as individuals and valuing the benefit of a beautiful, pure relationship, well, that's the world I want to live in.
Welcome to episode 90 of American Real, where today we bring you Steve Sims, the founder and CEO of the luxury concierge service, Bluefish. In 2017, Steve published his book, Bluefishing, The Art of Making Things Happen. He talks about that book and more, providing us with an up, close, and personal view into his incredible story and journey along the way. Listen how this man makes things happen for his clients, using a combination of experience and street smarts to negotiate some of the most unique experiential opportunities for his clients. Today's episode with Steve Sims is brought to you by Audible.com, who is offering a free download of Steve's book, Bluefishing, along with a 30-day free trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Visit audibletrial.com/Steve Sims to claim your free offer, and where you can access over 180,000 additional titles directly from your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And now, without further ado, I bring to you Mr. Steve Sims.
This is American Real. I am Roger Brooks. My guest today is Steve Sims, founder of Bluefish, one of the top personal concierge services in the world. You are an expert marketer in the luxury industry. You are a best-selling author of Bluefishing, The Art of Making Things Happen. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us about, where did you grow up? I know you're from the UK. Whereabouts?
East London. I was born in a place called Reading and grew up in East London. When it was not very nice, So I can't afford to live there now, but I lived in, as they used to say, the shitty end.
Okay. And growing up, what was this, your schooling like?
I went to public school, but not as you think public school is in America. I went to, you know, state-provided schooling, finished at 15, worked on the dad's building site, you know, every weekend and even some of the evenings. And then as soon as I finished school, as I say, at the age of 15, one day I laid in, and then the following day he wakes me up at 5 o'clock in the morning and says, right, you're coming on the building site with me. And that was it. I was working for him. So I went straight from school to a construction site.
Wow. And I'm obviously really fascinated about what you're doing today, but I'd like to see your journey of how you got there. So what were some of the things that you did after the construction?
Well, like all entrepreneurs, we don't fit. And we bounce off of the walls trying to make ends meet and getting aggravated and agitated and sometimes getting in trouble. So as a young lad from East London, not very well educated. I class myself as a very educated man now, but I also say quickly that school had nothing to do with that. Mm-hmm. And so I grew up not having any mentors, obviously in the 80s and 90s, so not having Facebook communities, books, audiobooks, not having any of that stuff. So I had nothing available to me to help steer me, yet I knew it didn't work for me. So I got in trouble and I tried to find connections and community and growth in all the wrong places. And I started working in many different jobs. And I remember probably one of my big euphoric moments was I was on a building site with my dad and I walked up the scaffolding and I had something that they called a hod. It was this funny kind of box shaped thing with one side missing that you stacked bricks in. You shoved it on your shoulder and you delivered bricks up to the bricklayers on the scaffolding. And that's what I was doing. And I was 18 years old at the time. And I've always been a big lad. Climbed up this ladder and got to the top. And there's my dad right near the ladder, working away. Next to him is my uncle, my cousins. And then right down at the far end was my granddad. I saw visually my family, I saw my life, I saw my next years in front of me all the way to the end. And it hit me so hard that I obviously froze because my dad yelled at me, you know, put the bricks down and get some more. And it was just like, is that it? Is that my lifeline? Have I just seen my future? And it hit me so much that at tea break time, you know, at 10 o'clock in the old canteen, having a cup of tea, I was phased, and I turned around to my granddad, and we're an Irish heritage family, so you know we're big solid numbnuts, you know we're not the sharpest tools in the shed, but we get stuff done, that kind of mentality. And I turned around to my granddad, and probably the smartest thing he ever said to me, I said to him, you know, granddad, did you always want to be doing this even when you're that age? And he turned around and not even made eye contact with me, but carried on eating his bacon sandwich and his cup of tea. And he said, if you don't get out now, tomorrow you'll be me. And I was like, damn. And so, you know, I did the stupid thing next. I got up, walked up to my dad and said, Dad, I'm quitting. And he was like, why? What are you going to do? And I was like, oh, I don't know, but I know I can't be him tomorrow, you know? And that was it. Of course, you're still living at home. My mum didn't talk to me. She thought I'd turn up, and I was like, look, I'm trying to explain that it's not, I'm not right here. Something's, so, you know, I tried doing loads of different jobs, tried working in bars, working on the door, delivering cakes, trying to be an insurance salesman, door-to-door salesman, selling books. Couldn't even read books, let alone sell them. And of course, me knocking on your door, that's not going to go well. And I just tried many, many different things, trying to find out where I fit. Just found a load of places that I didn't, but had the resolve to keep quitting. And for me, it was, I'm going to find the right thing. And for my family, it was, he can't hold a job down. So I was in that era.
Wow. That's, it gives me the chills when you tell that story, because I could just picture that.
I can still picture day. It. I can still tell you what he was wearing. I can still tell you the woolly hat on that it was so big for him, he wouldn't roll up the sides, so it would flop off like he was Papa Smurf. And I can still see the grey hat and the black donkey jacket that he was wearing right down at the end. It is as crystal clear to me now as it was those 2 minutes ago.
So as I did my research on you, the one word that comes to me is you are a connector. You're the ultimate connector. If someone needs something done, you'll find a way to get it done. I come from the customer loyalty space for my business. And a lot of times, we'd have clients that would want experiential rewards, bring our clients behind the scenes of a restaurant, or, open the department store during hours, before the general public comes in. But when I look at what you do, this is at a level that I've never even heard of before. How did this all begin?
So I applied, this is where I lose all credibility quickly into the interview. I applied for loads of jobs and got very few of them. And I managed to talk my way into a job that they were transferring a bunch of stockbrokers to Hong Kong. Now that's a whole story in itself that I won't take up this time now, but they were transferring so many of them, like a couple of hundred, that I managed to slip through the net, and they sent me a ticket as a stockbroker to Hong Kong. So I turned up on the Saturday, got drunk with them on the Saturday, got drunk with them on the Sunday, did orientation on the Monday, and I was fired on the Tuesday. So shortest career I think I've ever had. And quite simply, I'm now milling around Hong Kong, not knowing what to do, and I ended up working on the door of nightclubs. God made me big and ugly, so I did what I do best and stood on the door and told people they couldn't come in. And you kind of do things and then work out later on that that's what you were meant to do. I realized from an early age that I wanted to be of value. Now, they say that you are the sum of the five friends you hang around with. Well, my mates were poor bikers. I knew that I wanted to be more than that financially. So I needed some rich, affluent, successful people so that I could be brought up to that level. So as a doorman, I started recognizing some of the regulars turning up. And I remember the one day that I turned these four guys turning up to the club, I turned them away before they'd even walked through the door. And they were like, well, you always come here. And I went, yeah, you do. But there's a new club that's just opened up down the road. And most of the regulars have gone down there. So if you come in here tonight, it's going to be a bit quiet. You're not going to be happy. And you're probably not going to come back again. Yet if you go down the road, speak to Billy, tell him Sim sent you, you'll have a good night down there. And so I wanted to be of value. Bottom line of it is, for me to be irresistible to you, I've got to solve your problem. If I can solve your problem, you're coming back. So I was trying to have a way for them to talk to me, respect me, need me. And for that, it was to give them access into places they didn't know. So without realizing what I was doing, I was trying to find a way that they took me seriously, made eye contact with me, and listened to me. And not just because, hey, you're getting rowdy, you've got to get out of the club. But hey, what can we do, Steve? What should we do? I wanted to be that value. So I found that being a nightclub bouncer, I knew where the places were that people would go. And I use that as my tool to get affluent people to start talking to me. It's kind of got a lot further than that, but that's how it started.
And were you conscious of what you were doing at that point?
No, what I was conscious of was desperately trying to find a way that they would talk to me. That was all it was, I didn't have an end goal. I just knew that they were wearing a suit. They were turning up in expensive cars. They had watches on that were the price of the house that I lived in London. And I knew that I wanted it. And I knew that I had to be in that conversation. How could I get into that conversation? And so that's when I had to have something that they wanted to be in the conversation. So that's how it started. I just wanted to have the conversation. Where it would go from there, we'll worry about that later. Let's jump in the pool and then worry about how wet we are. That was my whole philosophy.
Awesome. Just very cool. So then what happens? So you're in Hong Kong. How long do you spend there?
So it started, there's a bit to give you before that. So I'm starting to get the respect of knowing where the best clubs were. And the epiphany moment, my life's been countless points of epiphany where things happen that you go, oh, hang on, and it sends you off on a different trajectory. The guys that came in, I don't know if they were the same guys, but I remember these four guys turned up at the club one night. And they walked up to me. And by now, I was telling people where to go and I was getting invited to their parties. And I was starting to build up some kind of, hey, Jack and John, how are you? It's good to see you. Some kind of level playing field and not just as the big ugly bouncer that was letting them in and out, that kind of thing. And they turned up one night and they said to me, are you going down to the yacht party? And of course, like on the door, I'm kind of blagging it a bit. I'm like, I don't know if I can get off. You know, maybe I don't know. You know, which yacht party are you talking about? I had no idea what they were talking about. So this was just blagging to get the info. So they told me about this party. And Hong Kong is pretty much a small island with lots of harbours. So they told me the party. And I went, I don't know. Are you not going? They went, no, we can't get in. So I'm like, oh, okay. So then they go into the club. So I turned around to my fellow meathead and I went, hold the door. I'm going to try something, you know. I had nothing to lose. My greatest talent was the ignorance of seeing failure at the time. You know, I was uneducated. I was ignorant to the word no. So what did I have to lose, sure. You know? And I've tried to contain that right. Ignorance. And so I went down to the harbour. And I see that setting up this boat. And, well, I say boat, you know, small ship. It was a three-story yacht, probably the biggest thing I'd ever seen, bigger than the house I lived in. And there's this girl down at the deck, and she's flipping around with her chart and stuff. So I kind of like, you know, puckered up a little bit. I walked over and I went, hey, how you doing? I said, you're looking after the party tonight. And you know, she's like, yes, I am. And of course, she's got the ego of the person that's holding the clipboard.
Sure.
So I said, well, it's going to be a great night for you. I said, probably pretty manic and hectic, but my guys are coming here tonight. I just wanted to know, do you want them here at 8:30 or 10? And she went, sorry? I said, I know it's going to be busy for you tonight. And I know you're probably going to get bottleneck moments, you know. And I look after a party just around the corner. You know, I didn't tell them I was the doorman, but I look after a party just around the corner, so I know how it gets. So I'm asking you, would you prefer 8:30 or 10? And she was like, oh, well, straight away, she starts flicking through the... Now, I haven't even given her the names. And so she's looking for a defense mechanism. And she's flicking through. And I went, hey, I don't want to take up your time. I just want to see what's best for you. And she went, well, 8:30 would be great before the rush. I'll make it happen. Thank you very much. Let's be blunt. The guys are going to turn up. They're probably going to have a great time. But let's be serious. They forget about the people with the power. I want to say thank you. And I gave her $400. Now, bearing in mind, I was making about $800 a week. Ooh. And there was tips on top of that, but it wasn't a lot of money I was making. So I gave her half of my week's wages. And I said, tomorrow night when this is over, you can grab yourself a bottle of wine and some nice food and just be thankful it's all over. She went, thank you so much. And I shook her hand and I said, have a good night. Now, I was taking a gamble here because the one thing had still not been done. She still had no idea who the four guys were. So I had turned away thinking, crap, I lost out here. It was I'm betting on black, sure. Here. And she went, oh, hang on a minute. What are their names? And I went, and she wrote them down on the front of her list. Okay. After that, she told me about every single party going on. But I went back to the party, walked into the club, walked up to the boys and went, boys, I just made a phone call and I did you a solid. You're going to the party tonight. And they're like, really? And I went, yep, you're going tonight. It's $500 each. And they went, and they shelled out $500. And I realized at that moment that the biggest thing people had a problem with was not actually paying to get in. It was the embarrassment of being turned away. Mm-hmm. And the more powerful, the more prominent, the more potentially in a position of influence you had, the less you were willing to risk that. If I could turn up and go, hey, you pay me 10 grand, because I have no embarrassment. If I get a yes, you're in. If I get a no, you haven't lost anything. I was suddenly in business. I found that I had discovered a problem of affluent people that I could solve. And I openly say, if you can solve someone's problem, you become irresistible to them.
Wow, Steve.
That was it.
That's incredible.
It wasn't too deep. It wasn't I sat down and worked out a 40-page principle or a PowerPoint or right. A business plan. I just tried to solve a problem.
But let me ask you, when you gave her the $400, did you have in your mind that you were going to charge them $500 each at that moment?
No.
When did that come to you?
I was working that out as I was walking back. I was thinking to myself, well, I just lost 500, 400 bucks, but hey, they're in. And then, again, a good friend of mine, Joe Polish, turned around once and said, is the juice worth the squeeze? So I thought to myself, well, I've just walked away from the door. I may be in trouble by the owner of the club. Probably not. What's my liability? What's my downside? Well, my downside is I've lost 400 bucks. So I could go back and tell them it's $1,000 each, and they could go, yeah, we're going to pass, and I'm out 400. So again, I gambled there. Let's go again. You know, because as far as I was concerned, the things that you fail at are your greatest education. And so I thought, let me see if I can play this right. And it was then by the look on the face that I realized I'd played it right. I'd brought it in low enough that they could handle it, but I'd brought it in high enough that they respected it. Because if I'd have gone, it's 100 bucks, they may have gone, we can't be bothered. Because if I say to you, I've got a brilliant party for you tomorrow night, it's 1,000 bucks to get in. Straight away in your head, you're calculating, that must be a decent party.
Right.
You know nothing, but that must be, because it's 1,000 bucks.
Yep.
But if I tell you if it's 20 bucks a ticket,
yeah.
See? So I just went in with, it's 500 bucks, and they went for it.
Wow.
So that was my education.
And that just started the whole career. How old are you at this point?
22. About 22.
Young guy.
22, 23. Yeah, young, little bit cocky, little bit full of himself, big lad. You know, I was a bit of a handful, so I thought I was pretty tough. You know, all the mixing of a bad cocktail.
Do you start doing this more and more?
Yeah, because quite simply at the time, I thought to myself, well, that worked. And what I was going for was not the $2,000, was not the $1,600 profit. That was nothing more than the fuel for the car. I realized that these guys were now coming to me and they were bringing me their friends. So I was now doing this thing called networking. I was now becoming the source of who knew where the parties were. And at the time, I thought to myself, if I have 100 rich people in my Rolodex, then surely I must get rich because I know 100 rich people. So at the time, I was always focusing on the one thing, and it was become a value. And I wanted to be able to phone up a rich person and go, hey, how you doing? And for them to go, hey, Steve. I never wanted to make a phone call and go, hey, this is Steve. The guy you met last night at the club, that guy, bald head, you know. I wanted to be able to go, hey, how you doing? Then go, hey, Steve, how you doing? Look, I've got something for you. I wanted that. So my focus was on building up a relationship with successful, or what I perceived at the time, successful people. From there, where it led me would be the next chapter. But I was on a first chapter basis. Build up the people, you know, classic, build the field and the rest will come kind of thing,
sure.
You know? And that's what I was doing.
And how long did that chapter continue?
Well, Hong Kong was actually closing out because Hong Kong was ending the British rule. And in 1997, it went back to Chinese rule. So there was a big exodus of expatriates. And that was my target market. Affluent, young expatriates working overseas, more money than planets, and wanting a party. That was my whole target market. And so I moved down to Bangkok because a lot of them did. Okay. And at the time, it was a thing called the Tiger Market. There was an explosion in business and commercial and real estate in developing countries like Manila, the Philippines, Thailand, Vietnam, places like that. So I went down to Bangkok and just did the same thing. And started working for people I went from working on the door to going, well, hang on a minute. If people will pay this amount of money to get into the event, how much does the event cost? So if the whole event costs 10 grand to do, what do I need to sell it to make 50 grand? And it was funny because I actually started doing that. And I started finding properties that were like cool vibe places, taking it over for the night. How much? And I started small. I started taking over nightclubs. Then I would start taking over restaurants and then penthouses of hotels and then mansions that were up for sales and then for yachts. And I would take it over and I'd be like, okay, how much is it going to cost me to take this over? And they'll be like, oh, it's going to cost you 10 grand. Okay, I'm going to sell this amount of tickets to make it 50 grand. And then I realized, hang on, I've got people that are paying $1,000 a ticket. I would go to jewelers and I would like, how would you like to be in a room full of people that are paying $1,000 to be in that room? And they'd be like, I want that. Sure. That's great. It's going to cost you 15 grand. So then I was not only charging, but I was actually sponsoring out. And then when it was yachts and mansions, I was saying to people, I'm going to put 100 people in this house. Each one of these people could afford your house. So now I wasn't even paying for the venue.
Right.
So I was always a case of, how can I get rid of my liability? How can I outsource my liability? How can I cover costs? And still, my focus was to keep adding value to these people. I never thought it was a job. My focus was, I'm creating value so it will give them a reason to take my call.
Where did that come from?
I wanted to be in that circle. You see, I'm a great believer
but
that...
who taught you that? Was it your family? I mean, was it your dad?
No, far from it.
That's,
no, I was...
For a
I
young
was,
guy, that's...
I don't know. You know, it's like someone saying to you, you know, well, why are you left-handed? You just are, mm-hmm. You know? What makes you an entrepreneur? And let's be blunt, nothing. You're just born with it. It's like, you know, you're born with blue eyes, you're
sure.
Born with two... It's just you.
In your blood.
It's in your blood. And if you're fortunate, if you're lucky enough, you aren't trodden on, you're grown. And nowadays we have the ability, and we can go back and go, well, look, at school, you had ADD. And at school, back in the 80s and 90s, they were prescribing drugs to get over that.
Yeah.
Now we're looking at people like Elon Musk, Steve Jobs, Bill Gates, and going, well, they got ADD. You know, we're praising them now, you know, because they won't settle. So we're actually, times are changing now. And I remember in the 90s when I told my mum that I was an entrepreneur, within a split second, my dad turned around and said, that's because you can't get a job. That was the response of that time. Someone had called me an entrepreneur. Someone had called me a hustler. And that was a bad thing in the 90s. It was like you were trying to sell a used
right.
car
right.
and you'd patched it up just to get it through the MOT and you could sell it for $100. If you were a hustler back then, you were nothing. Now, Gary Vee, Grant Cardone, Tyler Lowe, you're a hustler, you're revered.
Yeah.
You know, you're an entrepreneur, wow, you're Richard Branson. Times are changing, but I just was. But what I recognized at that time was that anyone could get their foot in the door. What I wanted to be was so irresistible, you didn't want me to leave. So I had to find what your problem was, and 9 times out of 10, it was experiences. People wanted to experience more. People wanted a solution to get in those places. And I became that conduit. And then, believe it or not, I actually thought they would offer me a job. And it was my wife that actually came to me, who I've known since a child, and she literally turned around and she said, look, what are you doing? And I was like, oh yeah, these guys are doing this project and this guy, I'm thinking that, like, it was the only time in my life that I never ever asked. I actually thought they would come to me.
Right.
And she said, well, all the time you're doing that, we're living in a penthouse, you've got motorbikes, I've got a Range Rover, we're traveling around the world, you're now doing events in Monaco, Stade, Bangkok, London. You've got a job. And I hadn't recognized it.
She had to point it out.
She was the one that pointed it out.
Wow.
Yeah, she came into my, and I'd set up this office. She was the one that came in. She said, you're doing 2 events a year. She said, you got clients. You've got a business.
I get the chills. I hear this so much from people where their spouse is very instrumental in helping them get to that next level.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's what, so that was one of those other aha moments.
That was a huge one. I sat there. She even came in with the bank accounts. She had printed out the bank account and she went, there you go. She said, where do you think that money's coming from? It ain't social services. That money's coming into our account because people are wiring it in. And I was like, bloody hell, you know, you're right. And so that was when we realized that we would see if we could make this weird party solving thing a business.
What I love about that story is that, Steve, you weren't focused on, it sounds like you weren't focused on the money.
Oh, no.
You were focused on the value, right? And this is what, you know, this is why I love to sit down with people to educate others, especially our youngsters, that don't focus on the money. Focus on your passion. Focus on adding value. That'll come. And that's exactly, I mean, she's printing out the bank accounts.
Oh, yeah.
It was there.
Absolutely. I've always said I'm there to solve, not sell. And I wasn't concerned about the money. I was concerned that you paid because you had to see the value. And if I gave you something for free, that's the value of it.
Yep.
But if I gave you something for 10 grand, but I put a lot more into it, you felt as though you got the better deal. And as long as no matter what I charged you, you felt you got a better end of the stick, I was in business.
That's awesome. So you're still pretty young at this point? I mean, what now? Are you in
your
30s?
Yeah, I'm bouncing around countries, and I'm in my 30s. We now established a concierge firm. I remember there was a new concierge firm that established, and they said that we only deal with the richest, famous people in the world. And all of my people were very rich, but very unknown. Right. And you know, I found that the richer and unknown, there were more of them
sure.
than the rich and famous. And you know the funny thing? A lot of people that are famous, they ain't rich. So
they just pretend to be.
They pretend. They do a good job, and they always want it for free. And yeah. I didn't want the hassle. I'm a low friction kind of guy. I wanted to work with the rich and unknown, and giving them better cocktail stories. And it grew from there. And so I'm bouncing around the world, dealing with people, getting them into places, and then it kind of went a step further. Then they were, well, hang on a minute. I've got this kind of wish, and I don't know if you could do it, but I'd really like to play drums with Guns N' Roses. I'd really like to, you know, maybe play a guitar with like ZZ Top. I'd really like to sing with the rock band Journey. I'd really like to do this with Richard Branson. And these fantasies started to come out, and I thought, that excites me. I wonder if I can do it. And that's the typical entrepreneur. How to make an entrepreneur broke? You tell them, oh, you can't do that for 100 bucks. But luckily, I never had the 100 buck bit in there. I was now having a gauntlet thrown. And I'm like, I wonder if I could do this with. And I suddenly started being able to do it.
How were you opening doors back then? Because we didn't have the devices today.
We didn't have the devices.
Yeah.
But if you haven't worked out already, I'm a very primitive person. You know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but I'm a pretty good tool. And my dad always used to say, and he used to love fishing. Bloody hate fishing and I hate golf. Two sports that I don't think should be. And I remember when he used to go on about fishing, he'd say, son, if you want to grab fish, go where fish feed. And I thought, well, that makes sense. So if you want to meet tonight in a place that you've never been before, 10 of the richest people, then go to the most expensive bar, you know? Go to the most expensive restaurant. Go to the most expensive country club. So that's what I started doing. You know, I want to meet rock stars. Where do rock stars hang out? You know, if you're in LA, it's a high-end concert hall or a venue or a bar that's very reputable for having those kind. And you'll miss many times, but then you'll hit a manager or then you'll meet an assistant or then, and you clamour up to find it, and that's where he works. Nowadays, my God, you can open up a phone and find out where these people are. You've only got to Google them, look under images and see where they hang out and just go there.
Yeah.
But in the early stages, it was a case of, do you know so-and-so? And because I had these affluent clients, a lot of the clients that I had, I found were my greatest resources.
Sure, because they had the connections.
Well, they had the connections, or they were involved in businesses that had sponsored them.
Mm.
So I then found out that no one climbs onto the roof alone. You climb up a ladder. So I then learned very early on that if I needed something, I'd look through my Rolodex, and I still do it now. What 10 people are in that sandpit? You know, just a similar sandpit. I want to meet a racing driver. Okay, who do I know that are in automotive? Well, this guy owns a franchise of cars. Has he ever got those drivers in? No, he's got those drivers in. But hang on, those drivers are in the same industry. Maybe they know that driver, and you would leapfrog. And it literally did that. I've used that same process all the way through, from getting people married in the Vatican to closing down museums in Florence by going to my existing clients and going, do you know anyone in this genre, in this industry, in this sandpit? And then when they've gone, I do, please make an introduction. And so I've always gone referral into everything. I make a point of never being the first person to call for what I want. And why? Because if I stand in front of you and I say to you, hey, I've sent people down to the Titanic. I've put people on stage with our favorite rock stars. I've sent them down the white carpet with Sir Elton John at his Oscar party. I've done this with Richard Branson, done this with it. As true as it all is that I've just mentioned, plus more, I'm arrogant. I'm self-promoting. I'm branding. I'm pushy. But if your best mate whispers in your ear, you see that guy over there? And repeats the exact same thing as I... It's gospel.
Right.
So I always get other people to do my selling for me. That way I can just walk in and go, hey, I believe Timothy called you. And he's like, yeah, did you really do that with Andrea Bocelli? Yeah, I did. And do you know what? I want my next story to include something that you're going to help me with.
I love it.
And so I always do that.
That's so awesome. It's smart. It's a smart, and again, that's the entrepreneur.
Yeah.
You figure it out, and it's a smart way to do it.
It's also the most simple, isn't it? And the most basic and the most primitive.
Sure. Can that be applied to other verticals, other businesses?
Every business. Absolutely every business. The whole premise, like, I've said to people before, you know, are you a referral business? And they go, yeah, I am. I said, well, look, do you have a phone number and an email on your website? And they go, yes, I do. And I said, well, you're not a referral business. You just get a lot of referrals. Now, not one of my websites has a phone number or an email. You cannot connect to me unless someone introduces you. So I am a 100% referral business. And I can make your business a referral business because there's no better marketing in the planet than getting a happy client tell somebody else. And one of the easiest ways I do that, which hopefully will help your listeners with this, I contact my clients. Regardless of what I'm doing, whether I'm doing consulting through Steve D. Sims, whether I'm sending them on a jet plane into the depths of wherever, I contact all of my clients with the exact same thing. I contact them and I go, hey, what did I do wrong? And then shut up. And they're thinking about what you just planned from, what you did from consulting that company. And they're like, he did nothing wrong. And you just wait. And they go, nothing. I got this and I got that. And this happened and that happened. You go, that's fantastic. What five friends of yours think that should know the same thing that you know? And they go, yeah. And that's how you get referrals. If you go to someone and you go, hey, what was the best part of that? Then you're just looking for massaging your ego. And they go, oh, you were so good at this. And you go, oh, would you tell five people? And they go, no, sod off. Just rubbed your ego enough.
Yeah.
But if you go the opposite way and you ask, what did I do wrong? Now, here's the beautiful thing. Some people will go, why do you want to know? And I've had that before. And you say, because I want to be the best in my game. In fact, I want to be the best in a game that others want to play in. I want to be the top of the tree. And I can only be that if I'm open for feedback. So I am asking you, I am begging you, what did I do wrong? What could I have been brilliant at? What did I not excel at? And if they do say, well, you didn't call me enough. You didn't send me the itinerary in my native tongue of Italian. Then you can say, thank you so much. Because they've just helped you be the best
sure.
in your game.
Absolutely.
And you still ask them for referrals.
Yeah.
So you're telling me if I did that, I would have taken your experience from damn good to exemplary to brilliant. And they will go, yeah, great. Then I promise you that's going to happen. Now, what five friends do you have that I should talk to?
That's great. Brilliant. Brilliant. So let's talk about some of these fun get-togethers you made happen. Wedding at the Vatican. How does that go down?
So I get a call, and this guy says, hey, I want to get married. Yay, congratulations. Yeah, but I want to do it at the Vatican. Any chance you could pull that off? So the first thing you got to do, look in your Rolodex. Who do I know that's in Italy that's powerful? Who do I know in Italy that's a Catholic and powerful? And I phoned up a guy in Florence, And I said, well, hey, how are you? How's the family? How's the kids? And, you know, chatting away to everyone. I said, I need something. So what do you want? I said, I've had this request. Who do you know I should talk to? And the good thing about playing always at the top tree level is usually you ain't got to go too far. Now, luckily, sometimes, pardon the pun, I've got a Hail Mary. So I contacted this guy, and I actually contacted two people in Florence. One of them returned my call, and the other one did later on. But this guy turned around and said, what do you want? I said, I want to get a couple married in the Vatican. Who should I speak to? And he turned around and he said, me. I said, really? You got that pull? He went, I can make it happen. Then make the introduction, and I'll make sure you're happy. Always say thank you to the people that look after you. And do you know one of the ways to do it, or one of the ways not to do it, is to give them money. People of power, people of influence, friends. If you turn around to your friend and you say, hey, can you help me out? Can you do that? They go, yeah, I'll do that. And you go, hey, thanks, buddy. Here's $100. You just paid him, yeah. You know? You've treated him basically like a one-night stand. Right. That's total disrespect. Money is, you want to get someone to hang the phone up on you? Phone them up and go, hey, how much will this cost? Click where you're done. So you always turn around. If you've got a mate that looks after you and you're willing to spend $100, then look up a movie that's coming up and buy him a couple of tickets and go, hey, I want to say thank you. Take you and that beautiful girlfriend of yours to this movie. I know you like the subject. I bought you a couple of tickets. Great seats. Have fun. Okay? Show that you've put some thought into it. Yeah. Okay? So I always look after my clients by sending them on a holiday, getting them tickets to access something, getting them something for their family or kids to show that you pay attention. But you make sure you say thank you for what, even if it didn't come off, you know?
Just say for thank the effort. You. For the effort.
Just for the effort.
Yeah.
So this guy hooked me up with the Vatican. And I went into the Vatican and I said, you know, we've got a couple that would like to get married in the Vatican. And I'm just wondering, what needs to happen in order for this to happen? Never ask a question that anyone can answer with a yes or a no. So I didn't say, can I get this couple married in the Vatican? Because no is the shortest word in the language and is no matter what language it is, everyone says no. You can say no to anybody and they will understand it. So I always ask, what needs to happen? What needs to happen to benefit you for these clients to be able to get this? And so I started communicating under the base and we found a way of it working. And there were some schools that we could support. So I said, I like that. I would like to support. And you tip ahead, you add value. So if someone walks into a shop and says, I want to buy a yellow cake, give them a yellow cake and then give them a couple of red cakes on the side and say, hey, thank you. Try these. These are new. Let me know what you think. You know, give them more. So they wanted me to look after this school for a couple of years. And I said to them, point blank, I said, I'm not going to do that. As far as I'm aware, the school runs for a 4-year period within those curriculums. We're going to look after 2 curriculums, 8-year program. Would that be a benefit to you? And they wanted me to look after 2 years.
Yeah.
And I gave them 2 curriculums. I gave them 8 years.
All the extra money.
Of course, I didn't. My client did. You know? But guess what? Because it was a charitable event for a school, he gets the tax write-off in any case. So everyone's winning, everyone's feeling good, and he gets what he wants.
Wow.
I did that with the Academia. Do you know the Academia David story?
Sure. Thing? No, I don't. So, I saw the picture.
Yeah, pretty cool picture, isn't it? A lot of people think it's photoshopped. I get this client and he contacts me and says that, funny enough, it's another wedding-y thing. He was taking his fiance and her mum and dad and a friend down to Florence. Mm-hmm. And he said, I've been down there many times, but they haven't. I need to get an exclusive restaurant this Wednesday. I was actually in Rome at the time sorting out this Vatican wedding. So I was local and there was like a 2-week break that I had to stay. You want red tape? Deal with the Vatican.
Sure.
I had to stay in Italy for 2 weeks. Their offices weren't even open, just in case they had a question. They needed me on site. Otherwise, the ball started right back at the beginning again. So I had to stay there. So I went, yeah, this will take my mind off things. What do you need? I need an exclusive restaurant in Florence. So in my mind, if I give him an exclusive restaurant, I've given him what he asked for. I openly say I've never given a client what they asked for. I've given them what they wanted. So I thought, how can I make this exclusive? How can I make this exclusive for me? How would this excite me? If it excites me, it sure as hell going to excite you. So I moonshot. I go, what is the stupidest, most outlandish, ridiculous thing I could possibly go for? Because even if I fail, I'm still a million miles further away than if I had settled. So I thought, okay, it's Florence. If I get the Palazzo, the Palazzo di Vecchio, which is in the main square of Florence, yeah, to close down, and I have a meal in one of those rooms, are you going to recognize that it's the Palazzo di Vecchio? Chances are no. You're going to look at the murals, you're going to look at the alfresco, and you're going to go, well, that could be Poland, that could be France, that could be England. So I went down all of these kind of things. And I found that the David, Michelangelo's David, was housed in the Academia. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're in America and I show a picture of you stood next to the Statue of Liberty, you kind of know where you are.
That's right.
So I thought, I wonder if this museum would close down and let me have a table of five at the feet of Michelangelo's David. And you know how I got them to close down? I phoned someone. I phoned up someone. I said, who do I need to speak to in Florence? And a few phone calls later, I got the person I needed. And they knew the people on the committee. And later on that year, they were having a gala for Roofworks. So I contacted them after being introduced. And I said, what are you looking to raise for the roof? And they told me, and I said, how about if half of your half of the amount you were trying to raise, we could achieve before you've even told anyone that the gala's even going on? And they went, that'd be fantastic. I can make it happen. Now let's talk about what we got to do. And so they allowed me to hold a meal. Now, for five, but we had a stringer came on that night, so it was for six people in the end, at the feet of Michelangelo's David. Now, that was a brilliant thing, but once I'd been agreed with this, and this is where, I don't know if it's the Irish lad from East London in me, or if it's the entrepreneur, but you know whenever we've got that shiny thing in our hand, and something shiny appears over here, we start doing that. I already had the Academia say yes. I already had a photographer set up and a chef and all of that and a string quartet. That was already done. I still had 48 hours. How can I make that better? So working with a lot of people in the music industry, I thought, how could this be just so Italian that it's back into ridiculous? What's the moonshot? So I actually got Andrea Bocelli to come in and serenade them while they were eating their pasta. And I had told my clients I had a local artist that was going to come in and sing to them during their dinner. So they're having that dinner. They've got David there. They've got a string quartet there. They've got a piano there. I walk into my client and I said, we're going to be entertaining you with a local artist in the next 5 minutes. Enjoy your meal. Enjoy the music. And they were like, thanks, Steve. Thank you very much. And then I walk in with Andrea Bocelli on my arm. And my client just literally just dropped the fork through his hands and it just went crash. And he just stood there like this, just staring at Andrea Bocelli coming.
Unbelievable.
That was incredible.
What song did he sing?
Well, this was pretty cool because they actually asked me, they were going to do, I think it was an 8-song set. And I thought to myself, I could give it to the client, which would kind of ruin the surprise. I like Andrea Bocelli. So I phoned up my wife who was back here in Los Angeles and we picked the 8 tunes.
Really?
And it was awesome. Never Say Goodbye. Sure. They couldn't do The Promise because that was more orchestral. So it had to be a lot more solo tunes that were done with the piano. But pretty fantastic.
That's so cool. That's so awesome. Wow. You're a great storyteller. I haven't had to say much. I didn't even get off page one.
So I'll shut up. I'll let you go.
No. This is awesome.
All right.
Tell us what a typical day is like for you now.
It's never changed. It's never changed since I got in my groove. you know, I'm 53 years old and I don't settle. And when I was 19 years old, I didn't settle, which was what got me in trouble. So thankfully, I don't get in any trouble now. I wake up, feed the dogs, drink the coffee, and then I pick up that phone to see what's going to excite me. What text have I got from a client challenging me? What is happening in the world that could excite me? I constantly look for excitement. And I'm glad to say that most of the time I find it. You know, what's going to go on? What could I do? What requests do we have in the company? And now what challenges are going on in people's lives that I can come into and disrupt? You see, I really enjoyed spending rich people's money on giving them great cocktail stories. But I'm really excited getting into someone's business now and going, why do you do that? Only to be met by the usual answer, well, that's how we've always done it. Well, if it's always been done that way, guess what you're always getting as a result? It's time to bin that. The times have changed. Let's excite that. And I'm actually enjoying actually getting into companies and consulting and finding that as the challenge now. So anything that excites me, that's what I get my head buried into.
Awesome. Where are you at from a standpoint of mindset? Do you have any practices that you do? Do you take walks? Do you do any meditation? Because I'm sure you have so much going on that you need some downtime.
I do, but I find that you get the cold turkey, and there's always that monkey in your brain that they talk about. I've tried meditation. And I've probably tried it wrong. And anyone watching this is probably going to reach out to me. Don't. But they will reach out going, oh, you did meditation wrong. You need to do it this way. You need to do it that way. I need to take my focus off of what I'm doing now and place it somewhere else in order to get my relaxation. Okay? So for argument's sake, I love riding motorcycles. Why? Because I can't carry a coffee. I don't care what's on the radio, and 9 times out of 10, I can't even give anyone a lift. It's just me, the solitude, and the focus on making sure that motorcycle stands up, that when I get off, I'm regenerated. It could be traveling. It could be doing a course in something that I've never done. I've done salsa dancing courses. I did axe throwing the other week. I did cooking courses, pottery. You know, I realized I hate doing pottery, by trying pottery. But guess what? When you're focused on something, nothing else can be in the game. Nothing else can be on the field. And then when you kind of get off it and you go, and you turn around to the rest of the world, the funny thing is they all line up in order of priority. So I find my meditation is regular motorcycle rides and regular challenging moments in things I've never done. As I say, we're going on a mixology cocktail course in a couple of weeks' time where we're going to be learning how to do cocktails. I was in Mexico the other week and we learned about how to mix a tequila bottle. And we actually came away with our own mixture and learned how to make tequila. So I relax by focusing on other things.
I like that. And you mentioned your courses. So you have I saw your website. Tell us about that. What are you
teaching? I'm a great believer that if a Irish bricklayer from London can be doing this with Elon Musk and the Pope, you're already out of excuses. You know, there's nothing that I can do or have done. The God honest truth, anybody else out there can do. The daft thing is 9 times out of 10, they're the ones that get in the way of themselves. They stand there and they go, oh, I couldn't do that. So we wanted to kick that out. When we did the book, and I've got to tell you how the book came about. I was approached to do a book calling out all the clients I'd worked for and what they did. And I quite openly said, if I do that, I'm dead by cocktail hour. Yeah, I've never announced a client that it hasn't been at a public venue. I announced Elton John, Richard Branson, because these have been in public locations where they've announced that we're part of the event, okay? But I never announced my clients. I announced the things I do. So then they contacted me and they went, instead of doing the book, you know, as a kiss all and tell all of what you do for these clients, why don't you make it more entrepreneurial and tell us how you do these things? And I liked that. I thought, this is the chance for me, as a father, as someone that's irritated with the way people are, how to change things. So I did the book, and to be completely blunt, I didn't think it'd go anywhere. I thought, I'm going to just pour it into the book. As they always say, you can't half jump in the water.
Sure.
So I'm jumping in.
All in.
This is my view. This is my opinion. Like it, love it, don't, whatever. This is how it does. This is how I got X done with Y to C by connecting B to A. This is it.
Blueprint.
Yeah, it's there. And that's why it was called The Art of Making Things Happen. And I did the book. And I think the first month, it sold 500 copies. And I think the second month, it sold, I think, 600 copies. And I remember phoning up my publisher, Simon Schuster, not exactly a small company, and going, hey, 1,100 books, is that good? Because I'd never done a book before. And they were quite polite to me on the phone, but I could sense it was a stupid question pretty early. And I left that call going, oh dear, this ain't going to work. And I think the following month it was maybe 1,000 copies. And then the following month after that it was 14,000, and that was it.
What happened? How did it take off?
It resonated. People realized that it was a bullshit-free book on just how to get stuff done.
And I'm thinking word of mouth too, right?
Yeah.
Just like your clients are.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So people in a communication industry, and that was the thing. We're in a world now where we're moving into AI heavily.
Absolutely.
I saw a report the other day that said that people speak to Alexa and Siri more times than they do their friends. And that's scary.
Scary.
You know? You can download an app that will tell you how to build a bridge, you know, calculate something from the mythical gods, but you can't download an app that's going to teach you how to communicate to another human being. It's a skill set that we're losing. And now, and I saw your face, you heard a phone ring a little while ago and you stared it down. We look at the phone ringing now as an intrusion in our life. Most of us have it on vibrate, don't even have it on audio. Okay, we see it as an intrusion that another human being wants to talk to another human being. And we're losing that. And what are we looking at our kids? We see the top of the kid's head more times than we do the face now because they're bent over that. So the book came out purely and simply for me to call it out. And I suddenly found that people that were in communication jobs, mortgage, sales, insurance, anyone, doctors, anyone that had to communicate something to another individual were getting behind this book. And they were starting to go, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? And I remember I had 16 followers on an Instagram page because I was told by Simon Schuster, I've got to get an Instagram page. I hadn't had Instagram. And I've always said I was a big deal to about 200 people in the world. And that was about it. They just owned things like countries.
Sure.
I had 16 Instagram followers. And then I think it was like shortly after that, I was like on 20,000 and, you know, 40,000. It blew up. And it just resonated with people that people need to communicate. And we don't need to learn. We need to get rid of all of the shit that's got in the way of us doing what we used to do naturally. And that's how it took off. So then people said, well, you know, can you do a course? Can you actually, this was the ironic thing, can you show us how to do it? And I said to them, I'm going to rip you off. I'm going to steal your money. I'm going to aggravate the hell out of you because I'm going to teach you what you already knew. You just decided through your mass intelligence to ignore because that would be better for you. Well, how's that working out? So we started a course, we did the course, started planning, and it's a 16 chapter course of videos. And as usual, you know, you buy the 16 chapter course. What you don't know is every couple of weeks I throw another couple of videos in there and I throw some literature in there. So I'm constantly adding to it because selfishly, if I can get you back to talking to individuals as individuals, and valuing the benefit of a beautiful, pure relationship, well, that's the world I want to live in.
Yeah.
So I'm doing it all for selfish reasons.
That's great. That's great. Now, is there accountability in that course? Do they have to report anything back to you, or is it all
they
self?
They don't have to.
Okay.
But we actually reach out.
Good.
So we actually reach out and call out and go, okay.
Because you want to see him succeed.
Again, that makes my life better, isn't
sure.
it? You know?
Sure.
So we will actually reach out and we look on the dashboard, and I have a couple of girls looking on the dashboard, and they find out that Jimmy's been on the course for, like, you know, 8 hours of the past couple of weeks. And we reach out and we go, right, you watched the course for 8 hours. I know you did, because that's what the dashboard tells me you were in. So what one thing have you changed in the past 2 weeks? And you'll get them go, well, you know, I'm just looking. And you can email them back and go, bullshit. You watched it. All you've got to do is action one thing. Just one thing.
Take action.
And you're now telling me that you didn't have the time. You didn't have the time to be more successful, more productive.
That's resistance.
It just makes no sense. And yeah, and we just find that, you know, every now and then we all need a bit of a push.
Sure.
And I say, you know, it's for selfish reasons. And so I just like doing it.
So what's next for Steve Sims? Where are you taking this enterprise?
Well, challenges. So when we released the book, we didn't even have a website, you know, because as I thought, I'm going to release the book. I'm going to throw my guts out there. I'm going to call it as it is. Let's see how it does. And it just... So we
congratulations, opened, by the way.
Thank you very much.
That's awesome.
It just hit number one in Taiwan, which was ridiculous. I got a copy of like about 20 books in Chinese from Taiwan, and it was pretty cool. But so we launched the website, Steve D. Sims, and we put loads of videos on there, and anyone that subscribes on there gets my videos, gets a PDF of the cheat sheet. And then people were saying, well, look, we want more of your idea and your friends, because I know some interesting people. So I started doing these private events called speakeasies. And we do them on West Coast and East Coast. We're doing one in Thailand where we just, and it's reverse engineered an event. So we don't tell you who's going to be speaking. We just tell you roughly where it's going to be, not even the address, roughly where it's going to be. And then we charge you $2,000. Okay, and we get about 40 people sign up, and we go, okay, why did you pay me $2,000 by knowing nothing? What's your problem? And then they'll be, well, I want to learn how to do this, or I want to do this, or, you know, I'm trying to get into this. And if you get a number of those people doing it, then I go through my Rolodex and I find a friend that's an expert in that field to come to my speakeasy to solve your problem. Because my idea is, it's not going to be speaker after speaker after speaker telling you how brilliant they are and how you should buy their book, and then they leave. These people get up there and they go, right, okay, I noticed from 20% of this room, you were having a problem with social. Well, these are the steps that I use to get to 8 million followers. Or you want to be able to do videos. This is what I did to get the largest video picked up by Ralph Lauren or Victoria's Secret. I get experts in that field come in to solve your problem. And put you quite simply in a room of experts you never normally would have been able to be in. And that's been my great fun at the moment. We've got another one coming up in a couple of weeks' time, but I'm really enjoying doing those at the moment.
I love it. We'll drop all of your links in our show notes so people could find you if they want to have their wedding in the Vatican, or if they want to go have Bocelli sing to them in front of the David. Wow, wonderful. If you were to take out your cell phone and call the 20-year-old Steve, what advice would you give him?
Do you know, that's not an original question, but it's a brilliant one. And I got asked it a lot of times before I finally realized what my answer truthfully would be. And my answer has always been since that I would tell myself to stay off of the crap whiskey. It sounds funny, but as a young lad, you buy the cheap drinks.
Sure.
And I don't like cheap drinks now. I like good top shelf whiskey. But you think you'd phone it up and say, avoid this. Don't do that. Do this more. But you know, my greatest education and my greatest profits came from my largest failings. Why would I be so disrespectful of not allowing myself to learn those lessons? So while painful, they were my most profitable. So I decided if I did bump into myself, I would just say, stay off the crap whiskey, drink the good stuff, And you know you're going to be all right. I'll leave
awesome.
It at that.
Steve, this has been wonderful. Great conversation, great story. I love your story and all the good things you're doing for the world. One last question before I let you go, and that is, I ask every guest, because I am interested, what do you want your legacy to be?
That is a tough one. I just want people to get out of the way of themselves, and when they think of me, they think of the guy that just called it as he saw it.
Awesome. Steve Sims, you're a class act. Thanks so much for coming on. Welcome to the American Real family.
Appreciate it, pal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning into American Real. Be sure to visit our website, AmericanReal.tv, or search for us on iTunes or YouTube for past episodes. While you're there, please rate us or leave us a review, as that helps others find our show. I am truly grateful and appreciate all of your support. At American Real, we're on a mission to help as many people around the world fulfill their dreams and obtain their goals. If you'd like to be part of our inner circle or want one-on-one coaching, check out the American Real Learning Academy, where we have self-help groups and courses so you can build the best you. We also have a new Facebook group where you can connect with high achievers from around the world. If you want to go even further, maybe you're determined to write your own book or launch your own podcast, contact me today to see if we could help. You can reach me through Instagram or Facebook, or email me directly at roger@americanreal.tv. And speaking of podcasting, our next course will be starting soon. So, if you're interested in launching your own podcast, join me at Podcast Your Passion. I'll take you through my 8-week course where I'll mentor you to build a world-class podcast. I'm only taking on a small group of people who want to share their passion through broadcasting, where I'll have you up on iTunes and YouTube within weeks so you can podcast your passion. Click on the link below for more information. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week.